Every Labor Day for the past couple of decades, we have talked with the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO about issues facing organized labor and working families in the state of Wisconsin. That tradition continues this year, and we will broaden our scope to the nation as well. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will also discuss President Obama's visit today to Labor Fest in Milwaukee, Wisconsin's gubernatorial race, jobs, the minimum wage, income inequality, and other issues. And we will welcome your views on these issues and your questions for our two guests with the AFL-CIO. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us once again this year Phil Neuenfeld, the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being back with us. I'll point out that you have not been with us for the past 30 years or more, but you have for the past several. Liz Schuler, though, also joins us. She is the Secretary Treasurer of the National AFL-CIO. Good morning, Liz.
Happy Labor Day, Joy.
Happy Labor Day to you, too. Let me start with Phil, and I know that annually you usually have a Labor Day message for Wisconsin. In a nutshell, what is it today?
Well, first of all, I want to say that all around the state of Wisconsin, I know there's a lot of eyes and ears and people watching Milwaukee with President Obama coming in. But I do want to point out that labor unions and working people are getting together all over, all across the state of Wisconsin, whether it's in the Fox Valley area, along the Mississippi, whether it's in Janesville or up in Superior. People are coming together, and they're coming together to continue to build solidarity, to network with each other, to reflect on what's going on in this economy, to reflect on what's going on in their workplaces, to get to know one each other and understand each other's issues and also have a good time and make sure that their families understand, you know, the value of being in a union and what it's about and the brotherhood and sisterhood that it provides. People are coming together, recognizing the need to organize so that they themselves have a stronger voice within the workplace, so that they can come together with other working people to have a stronger voice in their community. People are coming together also recognizing that there's a lot of people who don't have that opportunity, and they should. So how can they work together? How can they provide that opportunity to more people? People are coming together recognizing the income inequality that's going on across this nation and in the state of Wisconsin, the issue of not enough jobs that pay money, enough money to support a family on. The income insecurity that's in the back of people's minds, the anxiety of their jobs, the struggles that they're having with the, you know, less buying power in the economy. All these things are on people's minds as they come together and as they reflect on where they're going to go in the future. Obviously, the need to organize is there. Obviously, there's an election this fall that has a lot of attention with people looking at an opportunity to vote for governor. We've supported Mary Burke, who we think best represents the ability to help families achieve those things that I just spoke about, the ability to provide good jobs and good wages and help families,
We'll get into more depth on all of these issues as we go along. But Liz, do you have a Labor Day message for the people of Wisconsin or for the nation for that matter?
Well, I think Phil outlined it really well, and I want to thank Phil and Stephanie Bloomingdale and his team here in Wisconsin. They do an amazing job with the labor movement statewide, and, of course, Sheila Cochran here in Milwaukee. But I think, really, Wisconsin is the epicenter of labor and worker activism and community activism, and that's why I wanted to be here today. But I think just to add to what Phil said, certainly nationwide we're seeing and feeling the same things as Phil mentioned. You know, today's a day to reflect on work, right? It's the one day each year that we actually you know, think about what it takes to move this country and the work that goes into, you know, making our buses run and our, you know, schools efficient, and whether it's, you know, hotel housekeepers or nurses or electrical workers keeping the lights on. Sometimes we take work for granted, and really today is a day to reflect. But I think, you know, hardworking people are frustrated. They are frustrated across the country because they're making sacrifices, and their hard work and sweat and innovation really don't seem to be paying off in terms of what they're seeing their share of, you know, productivity in this economy is not paying off with wages. Wages have been stagnant, if not, you know, losing ground. And so I think it makes it just harder and harder for people to get by, and people are asking, where did that American dream go? So I think this Labor Day, it's really about shining a light on, you know, what can we do to continue to make this economy grow? What can we do to make sure that we're hardworking people get their share of the rewards of what they've built?
We will do that too. But I want to know first, Liz, and then Phil, what do you hope to hear from President Obama in Milwaukee today at Labor Fest?
Well, I think, first of all, it sends a message, you know, the fact that the president is coming here on Labor Day. He's been here many times, and he keeps coming back because, as I said, I think this really is where we see incredibly robust worker activism, and the labor movement has been an example, really, for the country. And I hope to hear President Obama, you know, at least, first of all, thank the workers in that audience for the fight back that they've put up against the attacks that we've seen here in the state on collective bargaining. And, of course, give us a message about, you know, how do we continue to grow this economy? We're seeing the turnaround, but we know that when you ask the average worker if they think things are improving, it's slow to come along. So we want to see what is the president and especially this Congress going to do to continue to make things better. And, of course, we would advocate for more investment. And so I'd like to hear that as part of his message.
Yeah, what do you want to hear from President Obama, Phil?
Well, I think pretty much along the same lines. I mean, clearly we're looking for him to make some comments and send some strong messages about what his administration can do to help workers in this economy, raise wages, provide more opportunity through investments in infrastructure, take a look at what's going on with the different trade agreements that are affecting our workers and our ability to earn a living. But I think in addition to, you know, looking at comments and where we are in this economy, you know, this is also a time where we're concerned and worried about rights, the rights of workers to form a union, the rights of workers to do so without intimidation, without harassment, without being subject to being fired. Also looking at, you know, the rights that people have around the voting rights and all the rights that have been under attack from the extreme right wing in this country. What he's looking to do and the positions he can take to help restore rights, to help keep those rights in place. And then, of course, you know, some sort of investment in infrastructure. The infrastructure in this country's lagging behind so many other countries right now, and by investing in the infrastructure, they can provide really good paying jobs, but also it helps the economy be positioned for the future to compete.
Yeah. Now, there's been quite a bit said over Democratic candidate for governor Mary Burke not being on stage with President Obama in Milwaukee today because she says it's a White House event, not a campaign event. Any reaction to that, Phil? Do you think that President Obama coming to Wisconsin helps or hurts Mary Burke?
Well, I think it helps from the perspective of everything that we've talked about so far, recognizing Wisconsin, recognizing the fight that's been going on here, recognizing the struggle, recognizing what's happened in terms of, you know, in this state, us lagging other states and job creation, the rights that have been under attack. So I think any time, you know, you can have something shed a spotlight on those attacks and those things that have been going on, so people can think about what's going on so people can get past, you know, the constant commercials that they hear saying everything's okay and Wisconsin's having a comeback, I think really does help. So from that point, I think it's a help. As far as the thing of official visit versus political visit, I have no reason to doubt that that's, you know.
How confident are you, Phil, that Mary Burke would be a friendly to unions?
Well, I'm in a position of having worked with her when she was the Secretary of Commerce. At that time, I was the Secretary of Commerce. Secretary of Commerce. Yes, that's what I said. I'm sorry. I was the Secretary Treasurer of the Wisconsin State FLCIO is what I was trying to say.
Right.
And in my role of doing that, I was doing lobbying in the Capitol. I was also meeting with department heads. And every time I went to Commerce with issues or concerns that we had about investments or about job creation or different things, but also going to Commerce to talk about help for employers, I always found her to be completely supportive, to understand what it is that we needed and working to make sure that our rights and our concerns were met this long, along with the business interests. When companies would go to her that had union representation, she would make sure that we were in the loop as far as what was going on. So she respected our rights then. I have no reason to believe that she would not respect our rights and our positions into the future. So I have a very good comfort level.
Mm-hmm. How important, Liz, is the race for governor in Wisconsin to the nation?
It's incredibly important. I would say probably the most important in terms of governor's races, for sure. And, you know, we're seeing all kinds of attacks going on throughout this country, but particularly in the Midwest, against workers' rights. And Wisconsin is surrounded, of course, by Ohio and Michigan. And so we have really focused our efforts nationally right here in the Midwest and in Wisconsin. And the governor's race, I think, is obviously symbolic, but I think it's also, a way for workers to really come together and show the power of collective action and the power of engaging in our democracy and making change. And so I think this race really does symbolize all that Phil was talking about in terms of solidarity and unity and really figuring out how we have a grassroots kind of bottom-up effort for workers to mobilize.
We are talking about workers' rights, jobs, the economy. President Obama spending part of his Labor Day in Milwaukee today with two guests from the AFL-CIO. Phil Neuenfeld is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, and Liz Schuler is the secretary-treasurer of the National AFL-CIO. This is our annual Labor Day program, talking about the state of organized labor and issues facing working families in the state and nation. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your views. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our annual traditional Labor Day show. Every Labor Day at this time, we have talked with a guest from the Wisconsin AFL-CIO about issues facing the nation and the state, issues facing working families, issues facing organized labor. And we have two guests with us today. Phil Neuenfeld, who is with the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, and Liz Schuler, who is with the National AFL-CIO. And we welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have more information on President Obama's visit to Milwaukee today on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. President Obama is scheduled to speak at Labor Fest in Milwaukee at 5 minutes before 2 o'clock, 1:55 this afternoon at the Summerfest grounds. And apparently, though, only those who have tickets can attend. Well, let's take some calls as we have Gene in Glendale waiting. Hi, Gene.
Madison Teachers, Inc. versus Scott J. Walker, 12 AP 2067, decided 31 July 2014. In common parlance, the Act 10 decision. Some of us in the legal community are wondering why this decision hasn't been appealed already to the United States Supreme Court. It was certainly the greatest obscenity in the history of the Wisconsin State Court regarding worker rights. Terribly reasoned decision, the lead opinion written by Mr. Gableman. And I'd like to get your guest take on the future of that case.
All right. Well, Phil first.
Well, the Act 10, as you know, Gene, has been tied up in various courts, and we've pursued a legal remedy to it. Where that specific case is in terms of when or how it'll be moved forward to the Supreme Court, I don't have that information, but I'm sure that people are going to continue to pursue any sort of legal remedy possible that's out there. And
any thoughts, Liz, on Act 10?
Well, I just think that it's a pattern that we're seeing across the country that, you know, attacks on workers' rights, attacks on collective bargaining kind of cut at the heart of workers' ability to, you know, leverage their collective strength. And I think it's by design. It's sort of a playbook, really, that we're seeing across the country. It's, you know, we're, as the labor movement, sort of the last institution left standing that can actually, you know, leverage worker power. And so I think, you know, we're seeing these attacks are not by accident. So we'll continue to fight back. We'll continue to, again, you know, state after state, put up as strong an opposition as we can, and whether that's through ballot initiative, whether it's through state legislation, or all the way to the Supreme Court, that's what we'll do.
Well, I think the other thing, though, Joy, that a lot of these court cases have really pointed to is how politicalized the court systems have become. When you look at the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, for example, those are elected positions. A lot of money is invested in those races, and a lot of the cases go along with those people that invested money in them. So it's discouraging from that aspect that, you know, it was not the intent of creating a legal review or a Supreme Court a process, which is supposed to be nonpartisan and fair. But I do believe a lot of people and a lot of organizations have lost confidence in that right now.
Now, Phil, a comment on Mary Burke's public position on Act 10. She has said that she will fight to restore collective bargaining for public employees in Wisconsin that were taken away in Act 10. However, she has not said that she would fight to repeal the entirety of Act 10. Is that good enough?
Well, I think that, you know, the entirety of Act 10 talks about a lot of things. It obviously talks about, you know, the workers' rights to collectively bargain around wages and working conditions. So if you restore those rights, then people can, you know, in a collective matter, come to the table and talk about the state of Wisconsin, talk about, you know, what's fair, what's equitable for workers. And that's really the process that needs to be in place. We need to see that happen as citizens. We need to see that happen just as human beings for people to have that right to do that. And then I suspect those other things will work itself out.
Let's go to another call. Scott in Manitowish Waters. Hello, Scott.
Yes, good morning. I recently saw a video of Governor Walker meeting with Diane Hendricks of ABC Supply, and she asked him what she could do to help make Wisconsin a right-to-work state. And Governor Walker said, yes, I have a plan. I'm going to use divide and conquer to help make Wisconsin a right-to-work state. What do you think of the chances are of that succeeding? And, you know, do you think that might be an issue in the campaign?
Phil?
Well, we're ever vigilant. I mean, we saw that film that comes from, I believe it was 2011, and I think at that time their intent was to attack public sector unions and their rights to collectively bargain and hurt those employees, and I think they just assumed that nobody would care, that unions from the private sector wouldn't come to their support. And I think what they saw when they did that, when they made that move to divide and conquer in that aspect, is I think that they saw that it wasn't going to work, that workers understand that everybody needs to have the right to collectively bargain, everybody needs to have that freedom, that right, that ability, and that an attack on one is an attack on all. So it's a slippery slope. Once you start taking rights away from one group of workers, it then goes to another and another, and I think people understand that. As far as right to work, what we'll see in the future, I mean, we're seeing so many discussions going on. It comes up in workplaces now where employers introduce, removal of union security at contracts. We're seeing a lot of activity from ALEC and from other groups trying to promote how they take away collective bargaining rights for all workers. And, you know, we've seen it in the Midwest. It's happened in Indiana. It's happened in Michigan. There's been battles in Ohio. There's been a huge battle in Missouri, on and on and on. So, you know, you have to recognize that, you know, attacks on collective bargaining, attacks on people coming together and having a voice, it's there. If we can, you know, prevent that from happening in Wisconsin, that would be a good thing. If it comes, we have to be prepared to advocate for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We'll see how this works out. I think that when you look at states that are doing well in this economy, when you look at countries that are doing well, one of the things that they have in place is that they have strong collective bargaining. And that's because then workers can earn a living. You have a voice at work. You can participate in things like how do you produce quality, productivity, and you can do so in a fashion of which you're an equal partner, which does not happen in a non-union environment. So hopefully enough employers, hopefully enough representatives, people in the public will begin to understand that as goes collective bargaining, as goes the union movement, so goes the middle class.
And Liz, we heard a news story just before this program where Governor Walker was saying that he has no intent in making Wisconsin a right-to-work state and that this is just the unions using scare tactics. Your response to that?
Well, I find it a bit ironic, actually, because I think usually those who are moving agenda items like attacks on collective bargaining and right to work are the ones who are using the scare tactics. And I think the caller said it right. It's the divide and conquer strategy, right? It's let's keep people separated so that they can't come together and actually improve their condition. Let's distract them with issues on the ballot or in the legislature, like right to work, so that they can't focus on class and poverty and economic opportunity and, keep people sort of in a disparate kind of state so that their power is diluted. So I think that's one of the biggest things we need to be focusing on for this election is let's not let those issues distract us. Let's actually figure out a way to have them motivate us instead and make this midterm election something that drives turnout, because participation in our democracy is the only way that we can create change.
Liz Schuler is the Secretary-Treasurer of the National AFL-CIO. Phil Neuenfeld is the President of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO. This is our annual Labor Day show here on the Ideas Network, and we welcome your questions or your thoughts for both of our guests at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Ron in Holcomb. And I understand, Ron, you're driving a truck right now.
Yeah, I'm working hard.
All right,
a little way up to Exmoor, Wisconsin.
All right, well, be careful, and what's on your mind?
Well, I'm a non-union truck driver. I worked in non-union and union workshops, and I have to say that while I was working in the factory, working along with side union workers, I have to say I was not impressed with a lot of their behavior, and I just think that they thought they could get away with anything. They walk in, they walk onto the line 5 minutes after they were supposed to be there. They sit there and screw around, try and get everybody fired up and laughing and this and that. And I just was not my cup of tea, and I left there. I got the heck out of there, went back to driving trucks so I could do my own thing. I'm working today. I'm taking tomorrow off. I got guys coming to look at my house. It's working fine. I have no problem with that. I'm also your first speaker. I voted for Obama in the first election. I did not vote for him in the second election. I can say I do not support unions, but basically he has labeled me as an extremist, and I do not appreciate that.
Well, I didn't quite hear that, but Phil, what's your response to Ron? Did you call him an extremist?
I don't recall that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't either. But anyway, he says that. Just that attitude that he has, that he thinks that union workers, maybe because they have protections, are kind of cocky and try to get away with things.
Well, the union workers I know are very hardworking people. You go into any unionized work environment and people understand their rights, but people also understand that they have to work hard for a living, and they do work hard for a living. And quality of the, you know, product quality, product production, all those things are of top concerns of organized labor. We invest time and effort and resources into training, into skill enhancement, into providing job security and opportunity through those things for people. Wherever Ron had his experience, I don't know, but it sounds like he's angry at something.
Yeah, because he brought up President Obama saying he voted for him once but not twice. Let me just ask you, Phil, what's your rating of President Obama when it comes to workers' issues or issues involving labor?
Well, I think it's hard to single out any one particular house in government. I think that some things have been put forward to this Congress, and it's just simply been blocked. It hasn't worked. And so I think that that's a sad situation for workers. It's a sad situation for the future of the country. And I think that, you know, he's made efforts. I think that those efforts have been stonewalled, have been met with great opposition. And as a result, nothing has been accomplished. I think that that's been part of the Republican strategy, if I recall, is that their number one priority was making sure that nothing passed. And when you do that, that's bad for the American people and the people that elect them to move into office. So I think it's pretty hard to say that we've ever seen a situation as we've seen in Washington.
Yeah. And Liz, your thoughts on President Obama's job performance and just Ron's call in general?
Sure, and I think Phil captured it well. We've never seen a situation as bad as it is, I think, in Washington with the polarization of the political parties and, in some cases, you know, folks taking positions in Congress that are to the detriment of our country in order to deny President Obama, you know, a success or a victory. And I will say that he's done a tremendous job of continuing to push forward despite the gridlock. I mean, we've seen most recently administrative action on, raising the minimum wage for federal contractors. We've seen, safety regulations, in particular on silica, that have been, you know, stymied for years, finally moving forward. We have a Secretary of Labor, who also, I believe, is going to be traveling here, who is given a lot of, a long leash, as they would say, to essentially ramp up enforcement on wage theft and make sure that, you know, standards are being enforced. And so I think it speaks to the value that our president has, that he's actually concerned about the inequality in our country. And, you know, we've seen the disparity in income growing, and he's using his bully pulpit and the policies that he can issue and enforce from the president's office to the best of his ability, despite, you know, kind of the do-nothing Congress attitude that we have in Washington.
Daryl in Lancaster is with us now. Hello, Daryl.
Yeah, hi. First, you have to prove your points in the media. Economic 101 realities is that low employee wages lowers the per capita earning power and purchasing power of the demand side of the economy, and that therefore shrinks the economy and develops a downward spiral. Increasing wages so that employees have more real earnings and purchasing power broadens the per capita demand side of the economy, which benefits all corporations, big and small, anyone that has anything to sell. Additionally, increasing wages broadens the per capita tax revenue base, greatly increasing tax revenues, which helps reduce state and local and federal budgets.
Yeah, thanks, Daryl. You would agree with that, Liz?
Absolutely. I would say, I think it was Ron, he said it well. We call that sort of the virtuous cycle, right? When workers have more money in their pocket, they're spending on goods and services, and that creates demand throughout our economy. So we definitely would be in favor of the policy that and the perspective that Ron was advocating. He, I think, laid out essentially our Labor Day message and the message we've been talking about throughout the year, and especially now that we're entering this last phase of the election, because it's clear that we're not seeing that type of investment take place, and we need to. Mm-hmm. The bottom 90% of wage earners have actually experienced falling wages since the end of the Great Recession, and 95% of the income gains since June of 2009 have gone to the richest 1%. So we are in a position where, you know, workers are saying, I've had enough. I can't take it anymore. And unless we see action, and action in the form of investment, investment in raising wages, investment in our infrastructure, investment in fair trade policies and unemployment insurance, then we're going to continue to decline as a country. So I think it's very clear, and I want to thank the caller for outlining it so well.
Yeah, and Phil, you agree with it was Daryl who.
Oh, Daryl,
yeah,
I'm
that's
sorry.
Right. No, and you, in fact, we do have your Labor Day message that was printed in the journal, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We need an economy that works for all.
Absolutely, and that was Phil, right?
Right.
Well, you get confused with two people. yes, I do agree. I mean, anytime you get into, you know, the talk about minimum wage, I mean, over the years we've advocated for minimum wage increases, and every time one is on the line, you hear certain interest groups come up and say, well, it's going to cost jobs, but then amazingly it doesn't cost jobs. I think part of what we're seeing in Wisconsin is with the reduction of incomes for public employees, with the suppression of wages for service employees and declining wages in other industries, you are seeing less money for people to go and do things in Main Street. You are seeing less money being spent into the small business community. So the reality is that, you know, there has to be, you know, a way for people to earn money, to spend that money. And that helps stimulate the economy. Investing in things like, you know, food, heat, electrical power, and other things is essential. And we're seeing too much of things going the other way. The other thing that we really haven't touched on is the fact that so many of the, you know, jobs that are being created and available for people, you know, in this economy are, in fact, low wages. And so they still rely on the government for assistance, whether it's for heat or for rent or for health care or for other things. So the taxpayers continue to pay to support the low wage industries, and that's just not right. So you know, if the investments could be made and people, you know, if you increase the minimum wage, if you find ways for people to collectively bargain, so they can increase their earning power, all those things help the economy across the broad and helps taxpayers and helps small business.
We're talking with two guests from the AFL-CIO on this Labor Day. Phil Neuenfeld is the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, and Liz Schuler is the secretary-treasurer of the National AFL-CIO. What questions do you have for them, or issues do you want them to address? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking labor on this Labor Day. President Obama will be spending part of his Labor Day in Milwaukee to rally for jobs, the economy, and workers' rights. And we are talking about his visit and the issues facing labor and working families with two guests from the AFL-CIO, one with the Wisconsin AFL-CIO and the other with the National AFL-CIO. And we welcome your participation. Our next caller is Jeff in Appleton. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, I'm just wondering, I heard it said, you know, workers just can't take anymore, and I think the other side of that coin is going to be taxpayers that just can't take anymore, and I'm wondering how the guests would balance that.
Yeah, and you're saying public employee wages or something, Jeff, with that?
Yes, correct. Right. I guess in the realm of Act 10, and you know, how do they balance, you know, public employee unions versus the taxpayer dollars?
All right. Liz, how do you do that?
Well, I think I would go back to the previous caller that talked about, you know, the demand side of the economy. And I suppose taxpayers, you know, would benefit if the economy was working and firing on all cylinders and we were creating jobs in Wisconsin like was promised under this administration. So I think, again, looking at raising wages for all working people is what is, I think, the solution to how we move forward. And when I say raising wages, I'm not just talking about the minimum wage. And, you know, certainly Phil touched on the fact that job creation that we're seeing is often in low-wage industries. But that rising tide that lifts all boats is kind of what we're talking about here. And, you know, minimum wage and living wages are one piece of the raising wages puzzle. You know, think work family policies that workers rely on now are also very important. And if we're talking about, you know, family leave and paid sick days, and the notion that, you know, there are some working folks out there that actually don't have paid leave available to them is just astounding to me, especially when you think about workers in a restaurant, for example, you know, who actually have to come to work sick and serve your food. So I think it's a broad package of policies that we need to lift up working families, and in the process, you know, it makes our state coffers more healthy, and then it's up to the state politicians and of course, Congress to determine how those revenue dollars are spent.
Yeah, and Phil, our caller, I think, was saying, hey, I'm a taxpayer, I have rights, and how do you balance that with workers' rights? And of course, it means public employee workers' rights.
Sure. Well, first of all, what people often forget is that public employees are taxpayers as well.
By the way, I should mention that I am a public employee.
Do you pay taxes, Joy?
Yes, I do.
There you go. So, you know, I mean, they're taxpayers as well. But I think that the point is that when you look at other states, I mean, you know, they're solving budget issues. They're looking at, you know, how to make the economy work. They're looking at what's the tax burden on people. How do these things work? But it's done in a collective manner. You don't have to smash dissent or take rights away from people to find that balance. And that's what a good governor, that's what good leaders should do. They should bring people together and solve problems. When you look at how you do things in the private sector, the best way to solve problems is with collective agreements and by people coming together to solve problems, whether it's in a shop operation or in any other type of environment.
And so you just want to bring sides together to solve problems and work together, and you don't accomplish that when you just, you know, smash rights and takes works away. The other thing that people should remember is in 11, when a lot of this stuff was going on, you know, you had leaders talking openly on Fox News about how this really was just an attempt to silence the voice of workers in the political arena. It really had nothing to do with the economy. It really had nothing to do, you know, with those sorts of things. So, you know, there's a number of views on this thing. But I, just looking at it from the taxpayer, how you square that, I mean, I think that taxpayers' concerns can be resolved. They are resolved constantly in other states. I remember Governor Christie coming out and talking about how he was going to work things out with his public employees, but he certainly didn't feel the need to, you know, shy away from going to the bargaining table to work things out. So there really is ways to do this without taking rights away from people. And to me, that was the most egregious part of Act 10, obviously.
Dave in Menominee, Michigan emails, unions are on life support in the United States. The Republicans have used a long-term approach at killing unions with the goal of lowering our standards of living back to pre-New Deal days. The Democrats need a long-term approach to bring our unions back and raise wages. This means running pro-union TV ads to explain the benefits of unions. Are the unions taking a long-term view of this to fight the Republican successes in killing our good-paying union jobs? So I guess a couple of points here. Phil, we'll let you start this one.
Gee, well, I think that, you know, one part of his question and comment, which is, you know, a very good question, very good comment, is the fact that, you know, America, Wisconsin, is seeing lower wages, lower benefits. And it's linked to the attack on unions and the decline in union membership in this country and in the state of Wisconsin. So I do want people to think about that and emphasize on that because, once again, you know, declining union membership has a direct link to how everybody can provide for their families, around how everybody can survive and prosper in this economy. So it's to everyone's benefit to make sure that, you know, they show support and that doesn't happen. And, of course, we welcome support from everybody. As far as a long-term view, I mean, you know, you also have to look at union membership and the decline in the tax. You have to look at, you know, the politics of America. And you're looking at, you know, huge amounts of dollars being invested into the political system from different organizations and, you know, certain corporate interests and things like that. We will never have the money to compete with those interests. So we are taking a long-term view at things. We're looking at how do we reorganize in a post-Citizens United environment. Citizens United just opens up the doors for corporations to have the same rights as individuals, to spend as much money as they see fit into the economy. They can do so through various means without any disclosure. It really does set the scale very much in their favor. So we have to look at how we provide a voice for working families in that sort of political environment. And we have to do that by looking at how we come together to organize and how we communicate and how we educate our members. But importantly, how do our members, how do our organizations reach out and work with those people in the middle class and in lower wage economy groups to start to come together to understand what's going on, so that when things like elections or other things come up, people can come together and act collectively in a way that, you know, offsets the intrusion of these big dollars. In Wisconsin, we see huge amounts of money coming in through these systems from outside of the state. We've just simply got to educate people to understand what's going on here. That the model of taking something that has 1 or 2% truth to it and putting millions of dollars behind that message so people start believing that message to be true. People have got to start understanding that, you know, that there's something at play here, and they need to look beyond that. So we are doing things. We're forming what we call solidarity roundtables in different communities around the state. That allows people to come together, talk about what's going on, getting people to better. The more people understand, the more people talk to each other about what kind of threats and intimidation, what kind of challenges, what kind of opportunities
they have from the different sectors of the economy, the more people start to understand and work collectively, the more we can build on that, the better we'll be. We're looking at how we educate our members and then how we better can educate the general public about the value of collective bargaining, about what it means to be in a union, about, you know, it's about wages, it's about benefits, but it's about other things like safety, working conditions, and those sorts of things that protect you when you go to work.
Let me get Liz a couple of comments briefly, if you can, because we're running out of time. The emailer says unions are on life support. Do you agree? And what's needed to improve the patient's condition?
Well, and Dave is right. You know, it's no secret that unions have been losing what we call density sort of in the economy for several decades. But we would attribute that, obviously, to the attacks we've seen state by state, but also the labor law. You know, labor law is broken in this country. It takes an act of heroism to form a union these days. And, you know, in some cases, we are at fault. I mean, for many years, people looked at us as sort of a closed club, right? And what was the secret handshake to get into a union? And I think that's an old stereotype that actually has changed as we are evolving in this economy. We are taking a look at how are we growing in new ways and representing workers' voices in a new and innovative way. You know, clearly the labor movement can't do it alone. It used to be able to make change in the economy by virtue of its size, but now that's not necessarily the case. And so we saw an example of that here in Wisconsin, where we are coming together with community organizations and, you know, young people and seniors and you know, pretty much every organization that wants to work together, we're working together with, and obviously going to continue to try to organize in the traditional sense and continue to reform labor law, but also looking at our actions on the ground and figuring out, you know, workers are in motion. You've seen the fast food workers, right? You've seen workers at Walmart coming together saying, you know what, we need to change the pregnancy policies at this store, and so we're going to go to the shareholders meeting and exercise our collective voice. And indeed, they did get a change. So, I mean, these are just examples of workers outside of the traditional setting, coming together, lifting up their collective voices, and exercising their power. So I think it's very exciting.
All right. Well, we only have about a minute or so to go. I'm going to give that to Phil Neuenfeld. What's your hope for Wisconsin and labor unions in the next year?
Well, I think we've already, you know, have been working to come together. We've been looking at how do we build unity, what's the solidarity plan, how do we continue to create a dynamic for unions from all sectors, from all walks of people, from all walks of life to come together and really, you know, kind of demonstrate what we need for working families in the state of Wisconsin. How do we have a voice in that process? So there, you know, there's obviously an election this fall. We need for people to come together and vote, you know, what are their economic interests in that. Obviously, you know, we've supported Mary Burke in the governor's race, but there's a lot of Senate and Assembly and other races that people need to educate themselves on and get involved. You have to get involved. You have to volunteer to canvass. You have to volunteer to make phone calls. You have to participate. As the old saying goes, politics is not just a spectator sport. You have to participate. That's the only way that your voice is going to really be heard. And that's important. That's important for us as workers. That's important for our future, for our children, for our communities. So, you know, we need people to get involved. And I'm hoping, I'm thinking that they will be very involved. And then beyond the fall, beyond the elections, you know, we have to look at what our agenda is and how we advocate for that agenda. And people that we support, we need to advocate with them, and we need to make sure that they don't just make promises, but that they actually work and help us provide a life for ourselves.
We'll leave it there for now. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Phil Neuenfeld and Liz Schuler from the AFL-CIO. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.